Greetings, this is Jeff Riddle, pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. This is another in this occasional series of readings from and brief notes and commentary upon Eusebius of Caesarea's The Ecclesiastical History. Here is Book 7 and Chapter 30. The pastors then, who had been assembled together, indicted unanimously a single letter personally to Dionysius, Bishop of Rome, and Maximus of Alexandria, and sent it throughout all the provinces. In it they make manifest to all their zeal, and also the perverse heterodoxy of Paul, as well as the arguments and questions that they address to him. And moreover, they describe the man's whole life and conduct, from which, by way of memorial, it may be well on the present occasion to give an account of these their utterances. To Dionysius and Maximus, and to all our fellow ministers throughout the world, bishops, presbyters, and deacons, and to the whole Catholic Church under heaven, Hellenus and Hymenaeus and Theophilus and Theotechnus and Maximus, Proclus, Nicomus and Aelianus and Paul and Bolanus and Protogenes and Harax and Eutychus and Theodore and Malchion and Lucius, and all the others who with us sojourn in the adjacent cities and provinces, bishops and presbyters and deacons, and the churches of God, as to brethren beloved in the Lord, send greeting. A little further on they proceed thus, and we wrote, inviting many, even of the bishops at a distance, to come and heal this deadly doctrine, as for example both Dionysius at Alexandria and Firmelian of Cappadocia, those blessed men. The former of these wrote to Antioch, not to the bishop, neither deeming the leader of the heresy worthy of being addressed, nor writing to him personally, but to the whole community, of which letter also we subjoin a copy. Firmelian, on the other hand, even came twice and condemned Paul's newfangled ideas, as we who were present know and bear witness, and many others know as well. But on his promising to change, he adjourned the proceedings, hoping and believing that the matter would be fittingly concluded without any reproach to the word. For he was deceived by him, who both denied his God and Lord, and also did not preserve the faith that he himself formerly held. And Firmelian was now again on his way to cross over to Antioch, and had got as far as Tarsus, for he had experience of the villainy of this denier of God. But while we had come together and were actually calling him and awaiting his arrival, in the midst of it all, he reached life's end. Again, after other remarks, they describe the manner of his life in the following terms. But whereas he departed from the canon of truth and has turned aside to spurious and bastard doctrines, we are under no obligation to judge the actions of him that is without, not even because, though he was formerly poor and penniless, neither having received a livelihood from his fathers, nor having got it from a trade or any occupation, he has now come to possess abundant wealth as a result of lawless deeds and sacrilegious plunderings and extortions exacted from the brethren by threats. For he deprives the injured of their rights and promises to help them for money, yet breaks his word with these also, and with a light heart makes his harvest out of the readiness of persons engaged in lawsuits to make an offer, for the sake of being rid of those that trouble them. Seeing that he considers that godliness is a way of gain, neither do we judge him, because he sets his mind on high things and is lifted up, clothing himself with worldly honors and wishing to be called Ducenarius rather than bishop, and struts in the marketplaces, reading and dictating letters as he walks in public, and attended by a bodyguard, some preceding, some following, and that, too, in numbers, with the result that the faith is ill thought of and hated because of his conceit and the overweening pride of his heart. Nor do we judge the quackery in church assemblies that he devises, courting popularity and posing for appearance's sake, and thus astonishing the minds of the simpler folk with the tribunal and lofty throne that he prepared for himself, not befitting a disciple of Christ, and the secretum which, in imitation of the rulers of the world, he has and so styles. Also, he smites his hand on his thigh and stamps the tribunal with his feet, and those who do not applaud or wave their handkerchiefs as in a theater, or shout out and jump up in the same way as do men and wretched women who are his partisans, and hearken in this disorderly fashion, but who listen as in God's house with orderly and becoming reverence, these he rebukes and insults. And towards the interpreters of the word, who have departed this life, he behaves in an insolent and ill-bred fashion in the common assembly, and brags about himself as though he were not a bishop, but a sophist and charlatan. And as to psalms, he put a stop to those addressed to our Lord Jesus Christ, on the ground that they are modern and the compositions of modern men. But he trains women to sing hymns to himself in the middle of the church on the great day of the Pascha, which would make one shudder to hear. Such also is the kind of discourse that he permits the bishops of the neighboring country and towns, who fawn upon him, and the presbyters as well, to deliver in their sermons to the people. For he is not willing to acknowledge with us that the Son of God has come down from heaven to anticipate something of what we are about to write. And this will not be merely asserted, but is proved from many passages of the notes that we send, and not least where he says that Jesus Christ is from below. While they who sing psalms to him and utter his praises in the congregation say that their impious teacher has come down as an angel from heaven. And he does not prevent this, but is even present when such things are said, arrogant fellow that he is. And as to the sub introducti, as the Antiochians call them, his own and those of the presbyters and deacons in his company, with whom he joins in concealing both this and the other incurable sins, though he knows of and has convicted them, that he may have them under obligation to him, and that they may not dare, through fear of themselves, to accuse him of his misdemeanors in word and deed. Yea, he has even made them rich, for which cause he is the beloved and admired of those who affect such conduct. Why should we write of these things? But we know, beloved, that the bishop and the priesthood as a whole should be a pattern to the people of all good works. And we are not ignorant of this. How many have fallen through procuring sub introducti for themselves, while others are under suspicion, so that even if it be granted that he does nothing licentious, yet he ought at least to guard against the suspicion that arises from such a practice, lest he cause someone to stumble and induce others also to imitate him. For how could he rebuke another or counsel him not to consort any further with a woman and so guard against a slip, as it is written, seeing that he has sent one away already and has two in his company in the flower of youth and beauty? And even if he go away anywhere, he brings them around with him, living all the while in luxury and surfeiting. Wherefore, though all groan and lament in private, so fearful have they become of his tyranny and power that they dare not accuse him. Yet, as we have said before, one might call to account for these matters a man who has at any rate a Catholic mind and is numbered along with us. But as for one who burlesqued the mystery and strutted about in the abominable heresy of Artemis, for why should we not bring ourselves to declare his father? From such a thing, we think that we are under no obligation to demand a reckoning for these things. Then at the close of the letter, they add as follows. We were compelled, therefore, as he opposed himself to God and refused to yield, to excommunicate him and appoint another bishop in his stead for the Catholic Church, choosing by the providence of God, as we are persuaded, Domnus, the son of the blessed Demetrian, who formerly presided with distinction over the same community. He is adorned with all the noble qualities suitable for a bishop, and we notify this his appointment unto you, that ye may write to him, and from him receive letters of communion. But let this fellow write to Artemis, and let those who side with Artemis hold communion with him. When Paul, then, had fallen from the episcopate, as well as from his orthodoxy in the faith, Domnus, as has been said, succeeded to the ministry of the church at Antioch. But as Paul refused on any account to give up possession of the church building, the emperor Aurelian, on being petitioned, gave an extremely just decision regarding the matter, ordering the assignment of the building to those with whom the bishops of the doctrine in Italy and Rome should communicate in writing. Thus, then, was the aforesaid man driven with the utmost indignity from the church by the ruler of this world. Such, indeed, was the disposition of Aurelian towards us at that time. But as his reign advanced, he changed his mind with regard to us, and was now being moved by certain counsels to stir up persecution against us. And there was great talk about this on all sides. But as he was just on the point of so doing, and was putting, one might almost say, his signature to the decree against us, the divine justice visited him and pinioned his arm, so to speak, to prevent his undertaking. Thus it was clearly shown for all to see that the rulers of this world would never find it easy to proceed against the churches of Christ, unless the hand which champions us were to permit this to be done, as a divine and heavenly judgment to chasten and turn us, at whatsoever times it should approve. At all events, when Aurelian had reigned for 6 years, he was succeeded by Probus. He held the government for something like the same number of years, and Carus, with his sons Carinus and Numerianus, succeeded him. And when they, in turn, had remained in office for not 3 entire years, the government devolved on Diocletian and on those who were brought in after him. And under them was accomplished the persecution of our day and the destruction of the churches therein. But a short time before this, Felix succeeded in the ministry Dionysius, Bishop of Rome, who had completed 9 years. Here ends Book 7 and Chapter 30, and we'll move on now to some notes and commentary. This chapter conveys the pastoral letter issued from the Synod, which condemned Paul of Samosata. It was directed to Dionysius of Rome and Maximus of Alexandria, a mark of the importance of these two early churches, as well as being directed to other churches throughout the provinces. It denounces the perverse heterodoxy of Paul of Samosata. It notes that input was sought from the respected bishops Dionysius of Alexandria and Firmilian of Cappadocia. Dionysius was unable to come, but sent a letter addressed to the church at Antioch, since he did not deem Paul worthy of being addressed as their bishop. Firmilian, on the other hand, had visited twice and had initially been deceived by Paul's claim to have changed his views. On a third visit, Firmilian had died as he was coming again to Antioch to look into this matter. In addition to the doctrinal errors of Paul of Samosata, his character is also assailed in the letter. Paul is accused of having used his office for financial gain and of seeking worldly honors, for example, as a ducenarius, a procurator of high rank who had a salary of at least 200 sesterae. He, according to this letter, liked to strut in the marketplaces and was surrounded by a sycophantic entourage. In his pride, he engaged in theatrical behavior. He removed psalms that addressed Christ as Lord, but encouraged the singing of his own praises. Questions are also raised about Paul's interactions with a group of spiritual sisters known as the Subintroducti. Finally, Paul is accused of partaking in the heresy of Artemis, or Artemon, as he was called in Ecclesiastical History, Book 5 and Chapter 28. The close of the letter is cited by Eusebius, in which Paul is excommunicated and replaced as bishop by Domnus, who is described as the son. That could be natural son. It could also mean a protege of the former Orthodox Bishop Demetrian of Antioch. Having been defrocked, however, Paul and his supporters held on to the church building in Antioch until the Orthodox petitioned the emperor Aurelius, who sided with them against Paul and had him removed. It is noted by Eusebius that despite the emperor's favor in this particular episode, he later stirred up persecution against the Christians and was held back from enacting it only by the providential hand of God. In reflection, Eusebius notes that the rulers of this world never find it easy to proceed against the churches of Christ unless God permits this persecution against the churches for their chastening. Aurelius was succeeded by Probus, and Probus by Carus with his sons Carinus and Numerianus. Next came Diocletian, who brought about the great persecution and destruction of the churches in Eusebius' own day. And just after providing this description of the succession of the Roman emperors, the chapter ends by describing the succession of the office of bishop in the church at Rome as Felix succeeded Dionysius. In conclusion, this chapter describes the church discipline that was enacted by the synod against Paul of Samosata. Not only Paul's theology, but also his ethics were attacked. It also anticipates the sufferings that would come under the emperor Diocletian by offering what we might call a theology of persecution. So the Orthodox, it seems, were pressed by struggles from within, as in the heterodox teachings of Paul of Samosata, but also by persecution from without, as they experienced it from time to time from the Roman authorities. And yet they continued to persevere, even as one bishop would succeed another in these churches that were at the center of early Christianity. Well, this brings this episode to a conclusion. I hope this has been profitable and helpful for those who are listening, and I will look forward to speaking to you in the next episode. Till then, take care and God bless.